And the minute you surrender and you're just like, I want to do what you want me to do. If you're telling me to let it go, you're going to work it all out. And I just have to trust you that this is the right decision. And that's exactly what happened.
The Living Church, serving the Episcopal Church and the Anglican Communion since 1878. Welcome to the Living Church Podcast. Welcome back, podcast listeners. About 15 years ago, a friend of mine taught me how to make a proper cup of black tea. Loose leaf, heaping teaspoon per cup, boiling water, 4 minutes deep, and a dash of milk. My mornings have never been the same since. But drinking tea has also meant the introduction of tea breaks into my life. Gotta love a tea break. It affects the way that I think about time, the way I go about my work. While having my morning devotions, I've often got a cup of tea steaming next to me. It's practical caffeine for sure, but also like a fragrant offering. It's beautiful. Tea has slowed me down. It's invited conversations. It's accompanied me in thermoses on trains, planes, and automobiles. It's been a way to connect in difficult seasons with people I love. And it just makes a Zoom meeting sound a little more appealing. Want to have tea time and chat at 2 p.m. sounds a lot more fun than want to talk about the org chart at 2 p.m. But, you know, you'll also talk about the org chart. Loving tea is also, of course, a total cultural passport when I go to the UK or really anywhere in the world. So why are we talking tea today? Well, we are an Anglican podcast, you know. Come on. But we've also heard about the global importance of tea in leadership situations in different conversations on this podcast. And whether it's showing hospitality or creating work-life balance for you or your staff, a hot drink, many times tea, has played a significant role in clergy and parish life. Just think about it, coffee hour. Or watch any episode of Father Brown Mysteries. I know an amazing Christian woman who knows all about tea and why it's special. Yes, she likes coffee too, but she also knows how God can use tea time as an opportunity for ministry and leadership lessons. Her name is Jackie James. Jackie is a certified tea sommelier and founder at the London Tea Merchant. She's also the former owner of the London Tea Room in St. Louis, Missouri. We'll learn today about her journey as a Jesus freak preacher's kid in the UK to a businesswoman in Midwestern America. We'll learn a bit about the slow art, the challenging business, and the fascinating science of tea, and where she's found God at work in it all. Namely, in how to stop and share time, how to run the show and let things go, and in what she's learned about self-preservation versus vulnerability to grace. Now, okay, I'm going to admit, I am also a regular customer of hers. I love the London Tea Merchant. Was I drinking their Queen of Hearts blend during this conversation? Maybe I was. And if you come to our worship and arts event in November, you can even stop in for a brew at the London Tea Room, which is not far from the conference. Finally, it is possible that you'll get a hankering for all things tea during our conversation. It's just possible. And if that's true, Jackie wanted to offer all of you, our listeners, 5% off at londonteamerchant.com. You can use the discount code LTMSHOP at checkout, and we'll also put that discount code in the show notes today. Now, get your scones and your Victoria sponge cake ready, because we're about to have a jam session on finding the Lord's work in a hot cuppa. We hope you enjoy the conversation. One of my favorite emails that you guys sent, you sent on July 4th. It was a year or two ago. Oh. And I don't know if I told you about this or if I tagged you on social media, but I posted it on my Facebook. And it was like, oh, now you want us to buy your tea. Right. Well, well, well.
That sounds right. Yeah, we're very tongue-in-cheek about July 4th.
And very serious about the 5th of November.
Yes, very much so.
Jackie, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, you are so welcome. It's so good to talk to you.
Oh, it's so good to see you and talk to you. I haven't seen you in many years.
Many years.
Many years. My sister, just for listeners' delight, my sister actually worked as a server at the London Tea Room many moons ago, I think 2008, 2009, something like that. And that's how we met Jackie.
Yeah, we were very new at that time.
New, but already going strong. So how did this happen? How did you end up in the art and business of tea? So in the 1980s, you sort of, your family landed in St. Louis. So what's that road to the US and to your current tea calling?
Well, it's kind of been a long road. Certainly not one I thought I would walk. Obviously, I've been drinking tea since a very young age, but because you drink something doesn't mean you really know anything about it other than the fact you like it. So when we moved here in the late 80s, at that point, I was a travel agent, so I was working in that field for quite a few years, right up until maybe the early 2000s, when I left to work for my parents in their furniture store. They imported beautiful antiques and reproduction furniture from England and from Europe. And I think my mom had always had this vision of a British tea room, or a small little restaurant that would be, so you could go shopping and then you could just kind of pop next door or walk through the door and go and have a nice cup of tea and some cakes. And when the furniture side of the business kind of ended up closing down in 2012, mainly due to the recession, we decided to keep the tea room going and we moved into a lovely little neighborhood in South St. Louis. And had a very kind of English feel to it, like the brick walls and the, and it was great. And I think we would have stayed there if we just hadn't kept growing. We were there for about 7 years and then we decided to kind of focus more on afternoon tea, which, you know, is the full service with the little sandwiches and scones and cakes and doing that by reservation. We did a lot of like parties and events and that type of thing. So this was back in 22. We moved. We had this huge kind of restaurant space now, like mass, way bigger than what we ever were. We split out the London Tea Merchant at that point because the London Tea Merchant, the merchant was becoming its own entity. And so at that point, we branched it off. And I felt that I had a decision to make. I was being given a way out if I wanted to get out of the restaurant side, which was, gosh, very mixed bag of emotions. I loved it, and yet I didn't love it at all. My life was getting more and more stressful. Mm-hmm. I kept wanting to gravitate more toward the tea, and every time I tried to do that, I kept getting pulled away because of the restaurant. And so I think it was just a time to have to sit down and really pray about, what am I supposed to be doing here? What is the plan? And it was very difficult because we've been in business 17 years.
Wow.
And also it was a beloved place for people to come. And I, you know, all of those thoughts of like disappointing people at the same time, you know, I have a daughter with special needs that is a progressive disease that she has. So trying to be there more for her was becoming more and more difficult. I wanted to be there more for my daughter. I wanted to have a life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I wanted to focus on the tea, yeah, which is my first love. So I really prayed about it. And I felt that it was like, let it go. I'm a steward of this business. It's not my business. This totally is God. You know, the reason I'm doing this, the whole thing. So holding it like with hands held out, as opposed to like trying to hold onto it. And the minute you surrender and you're just like, I want to do what you want me to do. If you're telling me to let it go, you're going to work it all out. And I just have to trust you that this is the right decision. And that's exactly what happened. You know, the minute, and the funny thing is what was it, about a month later, my nephews approached me and said that they wanted to continue the London Tea Room and keep it in the family.
Oh my gosh. It's, Jackie, resurrection story.
It is a complete resurrection story.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
And it's just so amazing. I've talked to customers and stuff that are so excited. And I'm so excited too, because I don't have that over my head anymore. I don't have to, but I can enjoy it. And I can now, I'm doing what I love to do.
You know, this has already come up and been a thread in this conversation, the relationship between tea and this art and business of tea and your own faith life. I want to talk more about how these are intersecting for you, but I'm curious now what your faith background actually is. I think you didn't grow up Church of England. Was it an evangelical? Did you come to Jesus in a Pentecostal tent revival? What was it? No,
not quite like that, but it was a very interesting story. You know, my parents were very young when they had me. They married at 18. Whoa. I came along 11 months later. My brother was born 2 or 3 years later. And it was about that time, soon after my brother was born, that actually my dad left my mom. And it was a really difficult time, obviously. And during that time, my mom, I think there was a couple of ladies that came to her door and started talking to her about Jesus. And she read a book called God's Smuggler by Brother Andrew. And it was about a man that went into China and these different countries with trunkfuls of Bibles, and the people at the borders and stuff, they would open the trunk up and they wouldn't see the Bibles. It was just an incredible story that really impacted my mom. And she really started seeking Jesus. She went to this little house group of people that were just doing a Bible study, and they were very supportive and loving. Then after a while, my dad actually came back, and couldn't understand how my mom was so different. Within a few months, he'd given his life to the Lord. He worked for, it was like a mission group, Crusade for World Revival. And he went and he basically gave everything up and volunteered. We had no money. We lived completely on faith. Like, we would have food show up on our door. And I remember this as a child, and you got to remember, this is the 70s. This is the Jesus movement. These people were just radical. You know? So I remember people being over at our house and the guitars and the singing and just very, very sweet, very simple, but beautiful at the same time, because these people were just on fire for Jesus. And so then I guess soon after that, we started going to a Baptist church. And I do remember that I was baptized when I was 11. And we were probably in that Baptist church for quite a while. And then we got a little bit what they call happy clappy.
A lot of us do.
Yeah. So the happy clappy thing was not very well thought of by the Baptist church. And we ended up moving out of there. And so my dad actually, when I was like 13 or 14, he went on full time as a pastor. So I was a PK. I was a pastor's kid.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's like my faith was very strong, but I got kind of jaded, I think, by being it was a big church. There were several hundred people. And I just felt, you know how like when you're a teenager and you get so kind of, I don't know, like worked up about stuff, and I would feel that people were very hypocritical.
It's kind of your job to sniff out hypocrites and get worked up about things when you're young. Yeah.
That was me as a teen. I was that teenager.
Now, were you also feeling added angst, Jackie, about being British and American and sort of being part of both of these worlds, but also in between these worlds?
I was lucky enough that I didn't actually move over here until I was 20.
Oh, so okay.
I didn't have my childhood. Yeah, my childhood was all in England. And I will say, for the 2 years or so before I moved here, I went off and did my wild thing. You know, it was like off I went. And then when mom and dad, I remember coming back and them telling me that they were moving to another country. And I was like, oh, I somehow knew this was going to happen. And then when they said it was America, I was like, oh, okay, so it must have been September they told me they were moving. And then in March, we moved. And in May, I turned 21. And had I been 21, I wouldn't have been able to come in with them on the visa. Everything just was mapped out for us to come. For me, I think I was at an age where everything was exciting and new. I was done with school. I, you know, was working as a travel agent in the UK. I came over here and worked as a travel agent here. I just fit right in. Yeah, we were involved in a church. It was a non-denominational church. I think it had previously been a Assemblies of God, maybe. And that's when my dad came in as a pastor, but it all kind of fell apart about a year later. Then it always seemed to be kind of a battle. And I married a couple of years after and, you know, kind of have my own. We went to a different church and that type of thing. So my faith journey has been kind of all over the place. And my church journey has been all over the place too. The most important thing in my life to me is not necessarily church. It's Jesus and following him, talking to people. I mean, I love like talking to people about him and talking about my faith and doing Bible studies. That's the type of thing. It's life. It's sharing, I guess, life with a capital L with others and having that in my life. I don't know, with everything that's happened along the way, I'm sure I probably would have made it, but I don't know how.
Hello, dear podcast listener. If you don't have plans the first weekend of November, I'd love to invite you to our worship and arts conference, Awe and Presence. It's hosted in a lovely little nook of St. Louis at the Episcopal Church of St. Michael and St. George. And we're going to be asking at this conference how the beauty and the rhythms of worship shape us, body and soul, for life with God. We're going to look at this through the lens of the arts. So topics will range from George Herbert and prayer, to worship with sacred images, to the bodily senses in worship, and more from some incredible speakers, including poet and musician Malcolm Geit, theology and arts guru David Taylor, poetry scholar Abram Van Engen, communicator of all things medieval Grace Hammond, and liturgy scholar Matthew Olver. If you want to learn more about traditional Christian worship and contemporary life through some amazing conversations, join us. Register and get more info at livingchurch.org/events or click the link in today's show notes. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Image Journal. Image Journal is one of the leading journals on contemporary art and faith, featuring full-color visual art and thoughtful pieces from writers such as Rowan Williams, Annie Dillard, Victoria Chang, Bruce Cockburn, Marilyn Nelson, Kathleen Norris, Padraig O Tuama, and Lauren F. Winner. I know you recognize some of those names. Image grapples with the mystery of being human through exploration of religious faith and spiritual questions. With new editor-in-chief Molly McCulley Brown, an incredible writer in her own right, now is a great time to subscribe. Or you can check out their fall lineup of craft writing classes and film and reading seminars. Learn more about all these things at imagejournal.org. That's imagejournal.org. It's so interesting to me to learn, or to remember, I guess, that your dad was a pastor and that your family was a traveling, ministering, radical Jesus freak 1970s family who continued to be spiritual adventurers in the Christian faith and sort of missional in the faith. And, you know, I think of what you do as a ministry. I thought of the London Tea Room as a ministry, of a tea merchant as a ministry. And I don't know if you approach it intentionally as ministry, but that's what I see. I mean, so over the years, you have sold and served people about 1 million cups of tea and maybe like 500,000 scones and slices of sponge cake and things.
Probably. Yes.
And so you've seen, you know how tea is a real blessing to people in sharing that. And you also have seen all these interactions around the tea tables. And so now I'm curious how you have seen God at work in the tea room.
I've talked to my dad quite a bit about this because it was almost like, you know, just some of the things that we went through with staff, with customers, with just even the business, you know, when things were hard. And, you know, my dad was like, this is like a training ground. Like God is using the London Tea Room and the merchant as a training ground for you. Like he would teach me so many things. Sometimes it was so horrible and mucky and yucky. You know, when you've got issues with staff, especially, that was probably the hardest thing, where they can actually get abusive towards you.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned after COVID, it got really worse. People were just sort of more angry.
Yeah. It's just say stuff to you and you're like, where is that coming from? Because as an owner and a manager, it was like important to me that people felt like, you know, working for the Tea Room was like a second home to them, that they felt welcome, that they felt validated. But when you would have like staff that would just say the worst things to you, the most horrible things to you, and about you to other people too.
Oh.
I think one of the things my dad always said, I should have been a defense lawyer because I'm so defensive. And over the years, it's like if somebody says something that is unjust, I can't stand to see anything unjust. If somebody, like even watching a TV show where somebody is falsely accused, I can't stand it. So I really, really struggled with that. And I realized that I was wanting to defend myself all the time. And it was like God was teaching me, you cannot do that. This is not the godly path ahead of you when you're trying to preserve yourself. What was the way that Jesus lived his life when he was on earth? And how many things that were so unjust and untrue that were said about him and how he was treated by others? Did he get defensive? I was like, no, he didn't. And I remember thinking, how can I not be impacted by what this person is saying? I mean, I would lose sleep at night. I'd be so upset. I would have arguments in my mind of what I could say to this person to, you know, put them right. Like, you have it so wrong. You have no idea. And I would get so angry as well. And it was the training ground, like, to become more like Christ. And that's what he wants for us. Like, Jesus came to show us the way, you know, like, this is how you live your life. And being defensive and angry and is just not a part of that life. And it gets in the way. It happened quite a few times. I think God probably had to take me around a few times to actually
circle the same block.
Yes, until like, okay, here we are again. Okay, yeah. Did you learn from last time? Like, oh.
We have a lot of listeners who are in church leadership, and how much I'm sure they can identify with, a lot of them lead staffs, and knowing how sticky and tricky a lot of that can be. And running a business has so many things in common with this, and working with people, working with difficult people, or people who maybe are acting in a difficult way, are acting out, it might be unusual for them. You don't know. They might be going through a difficult season. And so what is your responsibility? What is your response? And again, I just hear the theme of not gripping, that as soon as you feel yourself gripping and holding too tight, being, you know, too controlling in a way, that this is not the right path of Christian leadership. And I think that is so helpful.
It is literally letting go. I've heard somebody say, let go and let God. I'm like, well, yeah, it's kind of a little bit, but it's true. It's like letting go and just allowing God to move in that moment, because you don't know, like if you were to say something instead of like in anger and defense, but you just said something in love to that person, how that's going to impact them. And, you know, we had a situation way back when, I think it was probably when your sister was working for us, because it was in that building. And I remember a mother and daughter coming in and they were sitting at a table and one of my servers accidentally spilled some milk on her coat. And she got really pretty awful. Like, to my server, who is a fairly well put together young lady. I mean, she's in the back just sobbing, you know, like, because she was so upset. And, you know, she apologized, I'll pay for your dry clean. And this woman just tore into her. So I did go up, you know, I was like, I need to see what's going on here. And the daughter, of course, was mortified. She was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she did that. But there was a reason she did it. This woman was not normally like this. She just found out she had stage 4 cancer. And I remember her telling me that. And it was such a lesson to me that it's like, you don't know what somebody is dealing with. You know, they may never. And I've had times like that too, where I've been rude to someone. And I'm like, afterwards, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. But it's because of something I was dealing with. And we forget that about other people. We're so quick to judge in this day and age. I know I certainly have been like that too. And I think we have to sometimes stop when we, you know, get too judgmental. I would say that's something that the tea room definitely was a part of, was like lots of life lessons to learn.
You know, Jackie, another theme that's coming out as you're talking to me is hurry versus process. Mm. Being hasty versus going around the block 8 times and until it soaks in. And I mean, I'm just curious too about the fact that this is a tea business. So, you know, your parents didn't feel, you know, compelled to open like a pub or a meat pie shop.
Right.
So I'm just curious about tea and what you think might be significant about tea itself, the actual, you know, the substance, the drinking of it, the steeping of it.
It's a ritual, isn't it? It's something that you can't hurry not to get a good cup of tea anyway. Automatically, I think your brain starts to come down from the craziness. I mean, it's funny, in the UK at work, you would always have your tea breaks. I think that they would actually get more out of you when you had those, like that 15 minutes to just sit and decompress and have a cup of tea, you know, and then you got lunch as well. But you'd normally have a tea break in the morning and a tea break in the afternoon. And then also, I think with tea, it seems to be you can drink it alone, but it's such an enjoyable thing when you're with other people. And it's almost like I would watch people at the tea room come down. It would be like this deep breath, you know, like, oh, okay. And then you just see them sit down and you see people starting to relax and interact with one another. And there's something about tea that does that. And I can't think of any other beverage that does that. You know, I always laugh if you watch the British movies and the TV shows, that anytime somebody comes over, it's good news, bad news, whatever, the kettle goes on, you know, everyone has to have tea.
A bomb is falling.
Yeah.
Let's put the kettle on.
And you think about during the war, you know, they still had the kettle on. And it's just amazing. The just brings comfort, I think, in a way. So there's definitely something to, I think, the fact that it isn't just this immediate process, that it does take time. And then also to be able to connect with other people, you know, and tea, I think I may have mentioned this to you before, but the interesting thing about tea is what the caffeine does to you as opposed to what the caffeine does in coffee.
Okay.
It interacts very differently with tea. So when you're drinking tea, the caffeine actually crosses the blood-brain barrier. So instead of getting the immediate hit to the heart that you do when you're drinking coffee, you actually get a mental brain lift. So it's like, oh, the very, very few things actually cross the blood-brain barrier. And the stimulant is able to do that in tea. So it does give you, scientifically, there's proof, it gives you that lift and makes you feel more alert. It makes you feel calmer. Your tea has L-theanine in it. I can't say that it's going to be a massive difference. Like when you take the L-theanine pills and stuff, they help calm you. But that's what L-theanine does. It helps ease anxiety naturally. So you can see all these things in tea, why tea does what it does. I think it's the ritual of doing it and then what's actually in the tea.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Jackie, I don't know whether or not you'll believe this, but I got a text message from my sister a bit ago, and she did not know I was talking to you today. And she texted me and it said, "Hold the phone. I have created the perfect tea blend." And she starts texting me about the, she's, you know, the earthy, you combine the earthy sweetness of sencha, the brightness of lemongrass, and the almost floral notes of peach pit. And she's describing this blend that she created. So she's been working on, she's thinking about getting a tea certification. And so in her free time, she works on blends. But I told her, I said, "Jordan, you're not going to believe who I'm talking to in a bit. I'm talking to Jackie James." And so she says, I'm going to, before I actually make this part of the podcast, I'll ask her permission to share this, but she says, "Please tell Jackie hi for me. She has been a huge blessing in my life and an inspiration for wanting to enroll in a program to become a tea master."
Wow.
And like when my sister was working at the London Tea Room, and I'm sure that you know at least some of this. She was diagnosed with epilepsy in her senior year of high school. And her whole life changed. And so working in the London Tea Room, I just remember that being for her a really safe space, that safety, security, that sense of peace. And also got inspired to learn a lot about tea, which, you know, as she's continued to have really difficult spots or setbacks in her health, drinking tea, having that, being able to share that with other people has sometimes been a lifeline for her. So I know that God has used you, has used your business, and also used the gift of tea to be a blessing to my sister.
Oh, that means a lot to me too. Gosh, talk about, you know, when you meet people, if you look at what their heart is like, you know, like, I think that's so important. And when you see somebody, like you really see them and you love them and you support them, because like we said earlier, we don't know what people are going through.
Taking time to stop, be quiet, listen to God's voice, listen to what other people have to say.
That's an important thing, because we, in this day and age, our culture doesn't want to stop and listen. It just charges ahead. That's not what following Christ is about. It's not the easy way.
I hope you don't mind me sharing this, Jackie, but in an email that you sent me, I believe you did mention that when you are creating tea blends, that you also are asking God, "God, help me to create tea blends. Help me."
Yes.
Help, like basically like Holy Spirit inspired tea blends.
Yes.
And so.
But yeah, I mean, and it's really, you know, when you're in that place where you're trying, your brain is blank because you're trying to think of, you know, and there's been times where it's been like, "Oh, you know what? You've got that tea over there that you've not been using. And why don't we use this?" And then there's always like, I'm always shown like things that I wouldn't have thought of. So I can put down a lot of our blends are down to Holy Spirit.
Yes. If could there be a better advertisement for the London Tea Merchant for Christians?
Yes. Holy Spirit inspired teas. Holy, yeah.
You should put that in your next email. No, maybe not. I don't know.
I'm not quite sure what people would think about that.
Yeah. Well, you may just like, only get certain people interested.
Yeah. We might have some people with white jackets show up at the door.
They may.
What's the matter with you?
We'll see. But hey, Jackie, final question. The new tea room that your nephews are opening, will it be open by November? We have a conference in November in St. Louis, and I'd love to invite people to check it out.
Apparently, the date that they've given is October 25th for the grand opening. So I do know what it's like in the world of trying to open up restaurants, though, with construction and then the permits and all that kind of stuff. So I think that they have tried to kind of give a later date in case anything happens. So they're going for October 25th. So hopefully when you go in November, it will be open, and it's going to be not in the downtown area. It's out near Forest Park.
Are you kidding me, Jackie? Our conference is at the Episcopal Church of St. Michael and St. George across from Forest Park. It's that big old Episcopal church that's on the west side of Forest Park.
Yeah, I think it's on the other side because they'll be on the east side.
Well, people will just have to take time and take a walk across beautiful Forest Park.
Yeah, pull up the website. I don't know if it's going to be by reservation or what they're going to be doing. I have no idea what they're doing. But yeah, everything should be online.
I'm going to do that right now. I have to get to the London Tea Room when I'm in St. Louis.
Well, yeah, let me know when you're in because I'd love to see you.
Oh, likewise, Jackie. Likewise. I will do that. I have had the delight of speaking today with Jackie James, certified tea sommelier and owner of the London Tea Merchant in St. Louis. Jackie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Living Church Podcast, a ministry of the Living Church. Again, if this episode has put you in the mood for some tea, you can get 5% off at londonteamerchant.com with discount code LTMSHOP. This episode was edited and mixed by the team at Sound On, Sound Off. Learn more about their work at soundonsoundoff.com. In 2 weeks, we're joined by poetry scholar and podcaster Abram Van Engen for a chat about why poetry is for you, yes, you, you busy Christian, and is even for the church. Until then, I'm Amber Noel, your host, and it's been good to be with you. Peace.